Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. As always, I am so excited when Monday rolls around and I have a chance to talk to a whole lot of fun quilters and learn something new. So first up, I have Kathleen Brown of Mountain Patchwork. And Mountain Patchwork is her company name. She does the most adorable quilt patterns. And a lot of them are small and very doable so that you can have sort of that instant gratification of starting a project and finishing a project within, I don't know, like within your lifetime. You know, they're really, really sweet. And I asked Kathleen if she'd come on and chat a bit about her work and her stitching that she does called Double Stitch. So, hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Hi, Pat. How are you today?
I am so wonderful. Why don't you first just tell me, how did you become a quilt maker? What got you started in quilting?
Oh, heavens. I think I have always sewed garments mostly, and then crafting items. But when I made my first quilted project, which was a patchwork quilted tree skirt for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And after that, I was hooked. I still use that tree skirt today. I'm kind of sentimental that way.
Well, that's nice. You know, you still have it and you love it still. How awesome. So tell me a little bit. I know you're thinking, how long has that been? So tell me, Kathleen, how did you start Mountain Patchwork? You know, why did you decide to start doing pattern designing?
Well, I'll tell you, in 2003, a friend and then business partner and I, we started thinking about opening a quilt store. And we did our homework and, you know, just were ready to dive in. And for some reason, our lives took a different direction. And we just let the pattern designing part of our lives take over. And we loved the pattern designing. And we never looked back. We never regretted not opening the quilt store. Mm-hmm. But the designing process and the creativity is just so much more rewarding at times.
So what do you personally like about designing your own patterns?
Well, I'm a very traditional quilter. I have an appreciation for all quilts, of course, but my patterns are very traditional, and we just add a bit of embroidery and buttons for embellishment. I always start with something small. It could be anywhere from 8 inches square to 14 inches square. So it is a very doable project. And just when that idea hits you and to be able to create that traditional pattern with a little bit of extra little embellishments on it, that you can just make it all your own. And just the color selection sometimes will just change a pattern completely.
Oh, I know. Isn't it funny? You see the same pattern in two different colors, and it's always, you know, like, wow, that they don't even look the same sometimes. You know, you told me that you have this great passion just for fabric, you know, like so many of us quilters. How do you sort of think about your fabric collecting, because you have a very traditional color palette? Do you buy often? You know, what is sort of your process for dealing with fabric?
Oh, do I buy often? I buy as often and as I can, I guess. It's real hard to say no. When you find something you love, you just have to get it. You have no idea what you may use it for. And sometimes a piece of fabric will just keep some of those juices going, so you can imagine things. I've had one piece of background fabric that I adore. Do not ever want to cut it for some reason, but it gives me such inspiration for other things.
You know, I think that's really interesting.
This fabric is probably 15 years old.
Yeah, but you still get inspired by it, but you're not actually going to use it. I think We do that, don't we? It's funny. It's like, okay, I have that. I love it. And when I see it, I get motivated, but I'm not using it. It's staying there.
Right.
So tell me a little, your patterns are, like you said, you like doing things with, this sort of our smaller scale project, the size wise. What size patterns, I mean, what size quilts do you generally make?
Well, like I said, the pieces that we do, we always start with something small, and it's a small framed piece. You can either frame it, put it in a pillow, a tabletop, or whatever your desire. Most of the time we highlight it framed. And they go anywhere from, like I said, 8 inches to 14 inches. Now, once you've done something that small, then and you realize how easy and quick it goes together. And then sometimes we get a little carried away and do the same block and show that you can do a quilt with the same method. And, it just depends on what strikes you. And they are completable, doable, quick projects.
So let's talk a little bit about the double stitch because that's how I first sort of met you. One of my friends told me that you've got to go see Kathleen's work. She does this really nifty stitch, and then you shared that with me, and I shared that on one of the cruises that I taught on. I shared, that your projects. So I mean, it's just been so much fun. But I want people to sort of hear about it because if they haven't been, introduced to your designs yet. So tell me a little bit about what the double stitch is.
Well, the double stitch is an old utility running stitch. It's done by hand, so the piecing is actually done by hand. It's a warm and primitive stitch. It's not intended as a fine hand quilting stitch at all. And it's just using your same quarter inch seam allowance. You're just going to do a running stitch to attach your two pieces. You're going to take a little back stitch. You'll open your pieces. You press that seam allowance towards whichever side your pattern is calling for, of course. And then you're going to come through that seam allowance and do a running stitch on top. And as you do that running stitch on top, you catch that seam allowance underneath. And then you, when you get to the end, you're going to knot and cut your thread. So those two running stitch areas there, that is the double stitch. It's a warm and primitive stitch. Large crooked stitches are fine. It's supposed to be no stress. So.
And yeah. And so what weight thread do you use when you're doing that? Are you using
We
just
use
like
100% cotton thread. We don't use a quilting thread or anything like that. Just a medium weight, usually an ecru kind of color, something that will highlight the stitches, but not white, so it just bings out at you, unless that's the look that you're going for.
So is it regular like sewing weight thread is what you said, like it's like a 50 weight or maybe a 40 weight.
Yeah,
Not like a you're not using like
exactly.
pearl weight cotton, like the heavy threads.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Now, is
Now, on
there
some of our
batting?
embroidery, we do use embroidery.
You do use
Pardon?
embroidery thread. I was gonna say, do you have batting behind this yet, or it's just the cotton to cotton?
No, it's just cotton to cotton when you're sewing everything together. And it's just like piecing on your machine, only you're doing it with the double stitch.
It is, I mean,
And then
if we
when
go
you're
to
done with your project, pardon?
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I was interrupting you, but go ahead. When you're done, then what do you suggest?
And when you're done piecing everything together, you've got half of your stitching already on your project. And we use a piece of fusible fleece and attach it to the back of our project. And then you can go ahead and quilt, which you're going to use that same running stitch. It's not, there's no fine hand quilting. And then you'll go ahead and embroider and embellish with some buttons. And then you're just going to adhere that to a piece of foam board with some spray adhesive, frame it, and hang it.
They're just so adorable, Kathleen. People can go to your website, mountainpatchwork.com, and there you have photos. So they can now, hear and see what it is. Now, do you put embroidery on all your projects, or is this kind of selective?
No, I think on just about everything we do, we add a little touch of embroidery. And we try and keep it really simple, just a simple back stitch, simple lazy daisies for leaves and petals and that kind of thing. We use little tiny buttons to embellish along our vines and little flowers and that kind of thing. So we try and keep the embroidery very simple and no stress as well.
That's good. No stress. It's a really, really fun. So fun. So you don't travel too much, but you do go to a couple places where people could actually see you in action, demoing in a retail environment. Tell us where they could find you.
Well, the only retail show that I do is the quilt show in Spokane, Washington, each October. And we have a sit and sew table there in my booth. And we give the ladies coming by a couple strips of fabric, needle and thread, and show them how simple it is to do the double stitch. And once they've put those two little strips of fabric together, just once up and once back, they've got the double stitch and they're ready to go.
It's really everybody needs to try this. And if they go to your about page on mountainpatchwork.com, you have a really nice close up of a block so they can see. Kathleen, this has been just so wonderful to talk to you.
Well, thank you for calling, Pat. It was great.
So I hope everybody will go and visit Mountain Patchwork and try one of Kathleen's patterns, and then maybe they'll come and visit and do a little sit and stitch with you.
Oh, that would be fun. We love to sit and sew. We love to see everybody's face once they see how easy it is.
Oh, well, thank you, Kathleen. This has been great. We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Next up, I have Allie Winston, who is a designer and author of a brand new book called Quilt Lab from Stash Books. Quilt Lab, it was like exciting. I saw the cover of that and I thought, oh, this is different. The subtitle is The Creative Side of Science, 12 Clever Projects. And Allie writes over at her website called A Squared W. And so, there's just all these intriguing things. I thought, okay, we have to talk to Allie because we're going to find out what she's all about, what she's doing with quilt making, because, it's a little bit different. So, Allie, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's so exciting. It's like big day.
Oh, your big day. So I always love to find out how people found quilt making. How did you find quilt making?
So I learned to sew when I was young, and I was very into my decorating my bedroom, and the people at Joann all knew me. And I guess my official first quilt, although I probably would never admit to it again, was made of black velvet and satin and corduroy because I was very goth in high school. And nothing was square, and it was kind of a disaster. But I kind of let it go through college. And then when I was, after college, I was living on my own. I kind of got a bee in my bonnet that I wanted a yellow quilt. I was very into yellow. And so I bought a book and I bought a sewing machine, and that was it. I just bought all the yellow fabrics I could find and turned them into a quilt.
So your official first quilt then was all yellow. So you have moved from black to yellow.
Right.
And
Exactly.
now,
It's like a 180.
yes. You also have a little story out on your site. I forget where I read it. Might be in your about page about the toy sewing machine that you first got. Can you
Oh, oh
tell me just
yeah.
briefly? It was so sweet.
So, I mean, like I said, I was after college. I was actually doing some interior design because that was one of my passions. And I got, the cheapest little sewing machine you could get at Target. And my husband, who knows me better than I know myself, saw that, man, she's really into this. I'm going to get her a nicer sewing machine. I think it was still from Target, but it was like the fancy one that could sail, it could sew sailboat stitches. So he thought that this was super exciting. And so I got it for Christmas. And, it wasn't quite what I was hoping for that Christmas. I was kind of hoping for an engagement ring. So I pouted about it, and like I wouldn't open it. I put it in the closet. I was so mad about it. And about a month in, I was like, well, I guess I can try it. And then I just never put it away again. I use it every day. And then I finally upgraded and used that one every day.
Well, that's fabulous. I
So
just
best
love
and worst
hearing
gift
about.
ever.
Yes, I just love those kind of stories. It's like, okay, so let's talk about the book because really it's very unique and attention grabbing. Everything about it, Allie, from your the content, of course, to just how you presented things. And I know that you put a lot of effort into sort of the design and the styling of your book. So why, tell me a little bit about what Quilt Lab your book is about.
So, I mean, I mentioned that I was into interior design. Somehow I ended up as a math teacher. And so I've always dabbled in kind of creative and, making things, but also in the real science and math aspect since I went to a technical college. So I kind of have always straddled the line of what I like. And I don't, the idea just came to me one day that I'm going to make a bunch of math and science quilts. And then the fun part was, just making a list of all these ideas that and concepts that I think are really neat because, I mentioned this in the book. My sister is the doctor, but I always got the science magazine and I looked at the pictures because the pictures are always just so gorgeous. And, and I wanted to see how I could turn these ideas into quilts that, maybe not necessarily everybody understands why it looks this way, but it's at least a beautiful concept that we can all appreciate.
And you actually use, to me, let me just step one back one because I'm sure you, being a math major, a mathematician, think this way, is that patchwork is very math oriented and it satisfies a lot of structure that people like,
Oh,
who
yeah.
love structure, right? And they sort of didn't realize they'd have to use that in high school math when they become quilters. I know, and I mean, and even more advanced things that people can really get into. So you use math
Right.
terms, but then in your book you say like a section is called geometry. But you start out, it's like here's a rectangle. I think that that's so brilliant because it kind of breaks it down. Is that was that the Yes, geometry is just a square and a rectangle to start with. So
I mean,
what did
it is pretty much, and I mean, I teach geometry, high school geometry. That's actually what I teach right now. So,
oh.
I mean, it's all very fresh for me. And so, I mean, I see people, and it's not, you know, trying to be condescending. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, you probably haven't seen this since you were 15, you know, or really
right.
thought about why it's happening. You may have made mm-hmm. a quilt and, you know, you cut squares and rectangles, but you never really thought about why.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I try to, like, start basic. Like, we're not... I'm not going to teach you all of math in one book, but, you know, here are the basics and here's why this works for quilting.
And when you decided on the different patterns, they're not, you know, they have a little bit of a science sort of kick to them, but to me, you know, as a non-science person, but looking at them, they are, you know, beautiful quilts them in and of themselves. Some of them even I think would be great for sort of the men in our lives where it's always hard to find something sort of structural for them, like your molecule quilt. It's I just think it's mm-hmm. so great. Do you find men have responded to some of these a little differently than maybe you thought about?
Well, thank you for being so nice about all the designs. You know, the only man I've really talked to about it is my husband. And, I mean, he is my creative person. You know, he's an engineer, so he has the math mm-hmm. part, too. But his mom was an art teacher. And so he mm-hmm. has that background, and whether he thinks about it or not, you mm-hmm. know, I always bounce ideas off of him about colors and design. And so I think he likes them. Or else at least he's going to lie to me and tell me he likes them. But I'll have to see what some of the male quilters out there think.
Yeah, the another book, let's talk about one of the quilts in here that I like, because even though it has a science sort of meaning to you, when I look at it as this love, the form and the shapes, and that's your quilt called Echo. Tell me a little bit about that one.
Okay. So, well, the book is about math and science concepts and kind of teaching those along the way. It's mm-hmm. also about teaching some quilting techniques. And mm-hmm. so, you know, we all know, I don't want to say we all know, but we've seen the drunkard's path, and we know that we can piece a quarter circle. And mm-hmm. so I wanted to show, well, you can piece. It doesn't have to be a quarter circle. It can be an arc, you know, in different mm-hmm. size arcs. Based on the same circle. And so a lot of the time when I was trying to come up with the quilt design, I was trying to pair what I thought was a neat math or science idea with a technique.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And a lot of it was just Google and, you know, looking at diagrams and seeing where inspiration came from.
You know, I really think that you just put that extra layer of thought process into the quilts. It's very intriguing. It's just so much fun to read what it is behind the quilts that you're showing in here. What's your favorite in the book? I know you're not allowed to have a favorite, but you probably do. So I won't tell anybody. You can just tell me.
No, I do. and so that's actually so. I really like the fractal one and the molecule mm-hmm. one. And I don't know if it's because of the design or because of the colors I use. It's probably mm-hmm. a combination. Mm-hmm. But so I have a contest going on right now because I was surprised when my sister told me what her favorite ones were. And I'm constantly surprised and feel like, oh, this one's my favorite. And I think to myself, really? That one?
Yeah.
It's not my favorite. I mean, I like it, but it's not my favorite. So I have a contest because I want to know, what's your favorite quilt? What are you most excited about? Because mm-hmm. that's also crazy interesting to me. Maybe I'll make a graph and see which one is the most favorited.
I know that it is true. I mean, then do you travel and teach quilt making as well as your regular, you know, job as a teacher?
I love to travel. I will travel anywhere to teach it. Mm-hmm. If a quilt shop wants me to come, I will come and teach. But I mean, you know, I'm a teacher most mm-hmm. of the day, and teaching sewing is actually more fun than teaching high school kids, surprisingly. but
I'm not surprised. So if they want to contact you, Allie, they can go to your website and write you from there.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's A squared
seeing
W.
Seeing places is my favorite.
Yes. Oh, seeing
right.
places.
And,
always.
And it's a math joke, too.
Yeah, I know. It's like you can read about it on her about page. She explains it for people like me who are going, all right, I don't get it. So Allie, tell me quick. We have like a minute. So quick, condense you why you
okay.
like glue basting on your bindings. You like to do your bindings and do glue basting.
And this was not my idea. I'm not taking credit for it.
Right.
It's been all over. I'm just a perfectionist, and so I want the needle side. I machine bind, so I want the needle to catch mm-hmm. the exact same amount on the mm-hmm. on the binding, and it's like magic. You glue because you can actually see what you're looking at on both sides, and you glue, and it stays, and maybe it stays there for a week until you get around to it, or maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks, however long it takes me to get there.
And so are you sewing it down once, flipping it to the front or the back and gluing it there?
Yeah, I sew it to the front, flip to the back, and glue to the back.
And glue, and then do you hand stitch it?
No, all machine.
Oh, all machine then. Okay.
I never was bitten by that hand sewing bug.
Well, Allie, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing about your new book, Quilt Lab, by Allie Winston. From asquaredw.com. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Pat. It was such an honor.
We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we're going to segue over now to another designer who works in a modern style of quilt making, Debbie Grifka of Esch House Quilts. Whenever I go to a show and I see her booth, I am like zeroed in. I'm right there because I always want to see what she has new. I love her aesthetic. I love the sort of, I would say, a little bit more minimalist approach to her quilt making that she's very, very good at. So I asked her to come on the show and tell us a little bit about her work. Hi, Debbie. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I am doing wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I'm so glad you're here. Tell me a little bit about how you got into quilt making.
Well, I've been sewing all my life, and I'd always had an interest in quilt making, but I didn't actually really get around to doing anything about it until 2002. And I think that was a combination of things where I wasn't working full-time anymore, and my younger daughter had just about finished first grade. So sort of the backlog of other things was a bit clearer, and I could focus on something. So I just sat down one day and started doing it and haven't stopped since.
So when you first started quilt making, did you make traditional designs from traditional patterns, or did you start out doing your own thing?
I pretty much started doing traditional designs. I was very interested in figuring out, you know, what my style was. So I tried a lot of different stuff in the beginning to see what I liked best.
And what did that sort of teach you when you went towards creating your own designs? Did you pull from that?
Well, I spent a long time trying to figure out what kind of quilts I really, really wanted to make because I liked mm-hmm. so many of them. And mm-hmm. But the ones that I liked didn't always seem to fit into a certain style that I could tell. So I spent a lot of time looking at quilts and trying to think about why do I like this one and this one doesn't appeal to me so much. And it ended up for me being a lot about what at the time I called breathing room, but which now mm-hmm. I would call negative space. Mm-hmm. And I like quilts that have a lot of negative space in them. So once I figured that out, I started designing my own.
So when you were actually starting to really look at those quilts, were you finding mm-hmm. many in what you liked, or was the field kind of narrow at that time back in like 2002?
Well, I wasn't really looking at what I would call a modern quilts these days. In fact, a lot of the quilts I was looking at were much older. I mean, I'm very drawn to Amish quilts. Mm-hmm. And in particular, I had a book by Gwen Marston about Mary Schaefer, a quilter here mm-hmm. from Flint, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And a lot of her quilts captured my attention. And that was the book that I read that finally made me realize what it was, that it was the space around the blocks, what I called, like mm-hmm. I said, breathing room, that really drew me in. So once I figured that out, then I could start about making quilts that were a little bit more my style. And about that time, I found the Modern Quilt Workshop by Weeks Ringel and Bill Kerr, and that was a big influence on me as well.
Ah, yeah, they have a very much that negative space to their quilt making. Great people. So tell me, how do you describe your own quilts?
I describe them usually as graphic and bold. I like bold shapes and colors and mm-hmm. prints. So my quilts are not usually subtle. so that's usually how I like to use a lot of solids in my work. Mm-hmm. And that really contributes to the graphic quality of the quilts. They sort of speak to you from across the room. They're not something you have to get up right next to see what's going mm-hmm. on usually.
I like that. The bold and the graphic. Yeah, I think that's why I like it too. Like your work, you know, is that it just sort of mm-hmm. zings me from the distance. It's like, oh, there's Debbie's quilts. So do you have like an art background or anything like that?
No, I don't. In fact, I never thought I was very artistic or creative all the time I was growing up. So sort of surprised me that I wanted to design quilts, but I love it.
Well, I'm certainly glad you do. Tell me a little bit about the process you personally go through to come up with a design, because your work is very signature you in my mind. You know, if I look at it, it doesn't look like other people's work. It doesn't look like traditional quilts. I mean, it's very much your aesthetic, your soul that comes through. How do you go about starting a quilt?
Well, usually I start with a shape that I want to work with. Usually something has inspired me, or I think of a shape that I'm interested in, and so then I just start playing around with it. And I come to the fabric second, usually. And most of my quilts, when I'm designing them, I envision them in solids, and the print ideas then come second. Ideally, I like to make all my quilts in one version in solid and one version in print, because they're different, and it's really a lot of fun to see the difference between the two quilts.
So when you're laying these out, because of the, you know, you have sort of this places where there might not be any patchwork, you know, like I'm thinking of your chain link where, you know, you have like spaces that don't have the chain link, like a big hole in a chain link fence. I mean, do you sort of put this up on your wall and mess around, or are you doing it in a computer or graph paper?
Usually I'm doing it in a computer. I use Microsoft Publisher, mm-hmm. and so I usually design my quilts in there before I, then I usually write directions, and then I usually make the quilt.
Oh.
So
yeah. Now, how do you?
Since I do mostly patterns, yeah.
I know. Yeah. At some point you have to get your mindset around how am I going to write this? You know, it's great. I could just plunk this X up here, but you know, how do I tell somebody else to put the X in that exact same spot?
Exactly.
Let's talk about the next step then. When you're putting it into fabric, what is your process to think about color choice of fabric for a design?
I guess I usually decide, first of all, do I want it to be really high contrast or not quite as high? Most of my quilts are fairly high contrast. And I think about sometimes what colors I've used recently or what colors I've wanted to use that I haven't used, and then just sort of think about what might work with those, you know, and play around from there.
So when you're shopping,
then start pulling some fabric.
So have you sort of... You know, are you the kind of person who shops so that you have fabric, like your paint palette there? Or when you start working, do you go out and look for fabrics that would be perfect? What's your approach?
I like it if I have fabrics here, and I often have small pieces, but because my quilts tend to use larger pieces of fabric, I usually have, you know, like a piece of a color that might work. And so I like the color, but then I usually have to go buy more because I don't have enough.
That's always like the downside of just working out of what you have. Then you're like, I need more of that. Quick, to the store, to the internet. Yeah. Oh, it's 3 years old. I haven't used it. Find it used somewhere.
I do buy a few things by the bolt, so that helps.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Good quilter you are, by the bolt. So how did you come up with the name of your company, Esch House?
I live on Esch Court. That's how it came up with. And, you know, as a teenager, I was all enamored with fashion and the House of Dior and everything. And since I work out of my home, it sort of evolved from there. And I didn't think my last name or my middle name, I didn't like any of the names I have, so I went with the street.
It's perfect. Have people told you that? I think it's just perfect. It just feels like your quilts, you know, it's just awesome. You told me that, you know, making quilts is part of your life, but that you also like to really use them. Tell me a little bit about the quilts in your home. What do you have in your home?
Yeah. Oh, well, all my quilts are around. A few of them are on the walls, and some of them are on beds, and some of them are on couches, and, you know, I've got a lot of pillows, too, and things that I've made, so we do use those things in rotation. So it's really nothing better than to snuggle up under a quilt you've made. And I just love the texture and the warmth.
So what kind of quilting, you know, after you get the top done and you want to put it together, what's your thought process? Mm-hmm. Because you have less pattern on your fabrics. Many of your fabrics are solid, which means the quilting really becomes a design element. And then you also have all that space that you're, you know, putting texture on. So how do you develop what you'll quilt on it?
Well, I think my quilting is kind of minimalist too. I do a lot of straight line quilting. And I really like it, and I think it suits my style. It also evolved that way because until about a year and a half ago, I had a machine that, between the two of us anyway, we couldn't do free motion. So that was a practical adjustment as well. So, but I really love straight line quilting or simple quilting. Again, it's just, I think, part of my aesthetic, and I like the quilting to complement the piecing. And I will often be inspired by the piecing itself into figuring out what to do with the quilting.
So I have a question about straight line quilting, because one of the things, I mean, are you using your walking foot? I assume you're using your walking foot.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It's like almost mandatory. But how do you get it to be? What are some techniques to get it to be sort of smooth? Because you know how what happens is if you keep running straight line after straight line across a whole long surface, they tend to sort of like either start to curve or you get like puckering. Do you know what I mean? Do you have tips for how to keep it nice and smooth consistently?
Well, what I try and do is I often use painter's tape, and I don't use the whole, I don't put it like all the way along the line, but I will put pieces, you know, in very small pieces along the line of stitching to sort of keep me going straightish, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I also
uh-huh.
find that it's nice that our eyes tend to make things look straight mm-hmm. as opposed mm-hmm. to looking at every little wobble that's in there. The overall mm-hmm. impression, especially after you wash a quilt, is that everything mm-hmm. is straight, even if it's not
yes.
perfectly so.
And then do you...
That's a big help.
Yeah, yeah. Do you use the edge of your foot or one of those like bars that comes out to keep a certain distance, or are you relining every single line with your painter's tape?
I do use the edge of my foot sometimes, but that's only about a half inch, and
yeah.
I tend to quilt more like between an inch and a half apart. So, and I have used that, the bar occasionally. Last time we went to look for it, I couldn't find it, though, so I've got to figure out where that went to. But I do find the painter's tape very helpful, and every once in a while I'll draw lines on a quilt, you know, to give me something to chew up to also.
And you have a really nice, on your, you know, where you sell your patterns, you have one that's a free design called Lines Pillow, which is a really nice mm-hmm. little project that shows your straight line quilting. And so that's that's for your house. And you also teach. We have like about 30 seconds. You teach. How can people get hold of you, Debbie, for that?
Yeah, eshhousequilts.com is the best place to find me. And I have a list on there of classes I offer and where I'm teaching in the near future. So I love to do that.
Good. You were just you just came back, right, from something? Did I see that on your blog?
Yeah, I've had a couple of things going on actually locally here in Michigan this month, which was great. I taught at the Greater Ann Arbor Quilt Guild, which is my home quilt guild, so that was really exciting to be able to do that.
That is so much fun, isn't it? You know, because you sort of know them.
Yeah,
it was
great.
Well,
yeah.
Debbie, this has been great. I appreciate hearing about your work, and I will see you at the next trade show.
Sounds wonderful. Thanks so much, Pat.
Bye.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. Today starts our once-a-month visit with the amazing designer, Nancy Mahoney. Nancy designs fabric. She's an instructor. She's an editor. She's a book author. She just does it all. And Nancy's been on the show before, and she has great depth in her knowledge. And I thought it'd be really wonderful to have her come on every month, and we'll talk sort of more deeply about a topic and give you information and tips and things like that. So hi, Nancy, how are you?
I'm good, Pat. How are you doing?
I am wonderful. Is it sunny in Florida today? I just have to know.
Well, it's sunny here, but you know, in August, I moved to Georgia, so I now live on a lake and I can look out at a lake from my sewing room.
Oh, I forgot about that. Duh.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, slightly different weather in Georgia, but not that, maybe a little similar. Okay, so we are going
it's been a little bit cooler.
Yeah, I forgot when you moved that it was actually to a different state. Ah, so we're talking to you in Georgia now. So, Nancy, one, you go out and teach, and you teach a lot. You are on the road a lot teaching. What is one of the things people always ask you about, you know, when they have questions? What are a couple of the things?
Well, you know, they're always curious about picking fabric, mm-hmm. and how to go about that. That seems to be something people are not particularly comfortable with if they haven't been quilting for very long. And the other thing, of course, is accuracy and how mm-hmm. to cut accurately and how to sew accurately and really to get that quarter inch seam allowance and have their blocks come out to the correct size.
Yeah, I think I have a group that's has a lot of beginners in it right now on my Facebook, and it's just been fascinating. You know, lots and lots of great feedback and input, but accuracy comes up a lot. But so does fabric choice. And we decided, you and I, when we sort of laid out how we're going to go each month, is that we'll start with fabric because I think that motivates so many of us, the fabric choices that we have. So what is the approach that you personally use to pick fabric for a quilt?
Well, it depends a little bit on what I'm doing and what is going to be, what the quilt is going to be for, whether it's going to be for one of my books or whether it's going to be for a magazine or for a fabric company. But when I'm choosing fabric for a quilt that I just want to make, that's probably going to be for a book, and I want it to be scrappy, I'm going to approach it in a couple different ways. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways I do that is I might pick a theme fabric, a fabric that I just love. I just love all the colors in it. And I use that as an inspiration for picking the rest of the fabrics in the quilt. Mm-hmm. But I may not use that theme fabric. I may just
right.
use it as inspiration for the quilt.
I know. Do
you
maybe
you
put it on the back? Yeah, right. Sometimes it's like,
exactly.
Wow, never made it in there. That's...
No, but you love it. You love all the colors in it. It all mm-hmm. goes to where it works for you. And so you know that you're going to feel comfortable with the colors that you've picked. But
do you find...
sometimes I want to do a certain theme.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you find that people tend to overthink rather than going with their initial gut reaction to their fabric selections?
I think so. I think yeah. one of the things that has been lost a little bit is that people sometimes think they have to work within a certain fabric collection and they can only use the fabrics from that collection.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When I started quilting, we didn't use the fabrics from one collection. We didn't want our fabrics to match. We wanted them to blend together.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think a lot of people have the confidence to do that now.
All right, you have to, I agree, a lot of fabric lines, there are fabric lines that, you know, that's great, you make the quilts with it, but it all seems to spark it up some and make them more spectacular to mix. And you just use your, yeah, not just pick from one line. Although they do, of course, the aquas would be perfect together and then perfect with the green in that line. But then there's other greens and other aquas that go really well, too. You were saying sometimes you have a theme in mind. How do you go about fabric picking for that?
Well, if I have a specific color that I want to use, maybe I want to make a blue and white quilt or a red and white mm-hmm. quilt or one that's, you know, green and purple, then I'm going to probably approach that from a different way, and I'm going to pick out all the fabrics that I have within that one color range or within those two color ranges. And I'm going to lay them out, and I'm going to approach it from a scrappy standpoint. I'm really just looking at color. I'm not thinking about what the print is on that fabric. Mm-hmm. And mix them all together, and then it's really fun. I really like making quilts like that, that are scrappy and use lots of fabrics and lots of different colors that blend together. Are not necessarily all brights or all darks or all dull fabrics, but, you know, I want to use a range of scale and a range of values within that quilt.
And what I find is that people sometimes, fabrics that have multiple colors in them, they'll get very focused on the fact that the fabric has multiple colors. It has like a red background with pink flowers on it or what a yellow flowers on it. And then they'll be like, well, is this red or is it yellow? I mean, what is it? And I look at it as just red. I look at what usually is the base of it and then use it for my reds. So that if you were pulling like that scrappy, it would come out and be selected. How do you sort your stuff? Because I find that sometimes people compartmentalize their fabric too much. All my large florals are in one bin, so therefore they never go in there when they start selecting.
Well, I have all my fabrics by color. Mm-hmm. There's only two things that I don't put by color, mm-hmm. and that's my 30s mm-hmm. and my batiks. And I've kind of always kept my batiks separately. Not because I use them exclusively, but I don't know why. I just always kind of have kept them separately and think of them as like their own category. But otherwise, I put everything together by color.
You're right. And I have, I don't work with 30s very much. So actually, my 30s are separate for that reason. So because someday they're all going to go together in something. So I leave them together. But I've put like the solids, you know, you put those, if you've got the greens, your green solid should be in there. So I don't people have like a polka dot basket. Well, when you go to select all your fabrics, if you don't remember to go look in the polka dot basket, then you've just missed all kinds of great opportunities.
Exactly. And, you know, I created a quilt for my new book, Simple Circles and Quick Curves, which I called Lots of Dots. And for that particular quilt, I wanted to use dots. I didn't care what color. I just wanted to use dots. And so I went through and pulled out my dots out of the different colors and laid them out and really – and then if I needed something else, so I thought, well, I need another turquoise or I need another red, I would go to those colors and pull them out. But that's another way to approach really picking your fabrics is maybe you're going to use just novelty fabrics in a quilt or you're going to use a specific type of fabric, a plaid or something, all batiks or something like that.
So when when you are sort of auditioning, are you using any kind of a tool to help you audition? You know how you have viewfinders or different things for looking at the color?
I've never really been successful with the Ruby Beholder. That's the red. Sometimes they can be a piece of plastic that's red, and it's supposed to let you take out the value or let you see the value.
Right.
So it takes out the color. Mm-hmm. I've just never really gotten that to work for me. So I will take a picture sometimes and then import that picture into my computer and take out the color so that I'm looking at it just in black and white.
Right.
Or you can also do that on a copier where you can lay your fabrics on your copier and just take a black and white copy. And I found that to be much more successful for me. Be able to see the values and make sure that my values aren't too close.
And when you're looking for value, take that another step for me, Nancy, and tell me what it is people, they took this black and white, photocopy or whatever, they're looking through the Ruby glasses or whatever. What are they looking for?
Generally, they're looking for light, medium, and dark.
Okay.
And, value is really relative. And a light fabric next to a medium fabric, you can almost always tell which one is light. It's really those mediums. And when you place a medium next to one that's lighter, it may read as a medium or it may read as a dark. But But that same fabric placed next to a dark fabric may read as a light. Mm-hmm. And so you're really looking at, it's really your mediums that you're really trying to determine whether they're light or dark, and that you have enough contrast between your fabrics. You know, Pat, I do a lecture on color, and I show mm-hmm. some of my pieces that I would call not successful, and say, you know, I learned from this quilt
yeah.
that I didn't have enough value contrast. I didn't have enough mm-hmm. contrast between these fabrics because they were the same value or they were the same scale, or mm-hmm. you just can't see the design because I didn't pick the right fabric to put here.
And that's where using some tools in advance, your camera, eye peeps, anything that could take the color away, all these different options, it helps you when you're auditioning it on the table before you actually cut anything. That's what I find.
I think so, too. And you can use binoculars, turn your binoculars around mm-hmm. and look from the what would normally be the big end. You put that up mm-hmm. next to your eye, so what you're looking through would normally be the eye part of the binocular. Mm-hmm. You can also get mirrors so that you can make one block and you can put the mirrors on the block and it'll see how it's going to look as the whole quilt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that can help you see if you're going to, over the course of the whole quilt, have enough mm-hmm. interest and movement in your fabrics. So there's lots of different tools to use.
I think it's really important to try to do a lot of that auditioning, because I call it auditioning, before you get into creating blocks or applique or whatever, so that you sort of get a set of fabric that looks awesome before you start.
It's important. Then you're not wasting as much fabric.
Right.
Of course, you can always use
the
block on the back. If you sew the block up and you realize that it's just not working for you, trust yourself. I have done that so many times where I have made a block and said, oh, it'll be better. It'll get better.
Yeah.
And
it'll get better. Yeah, you can't force it sometimes. Well,
no,
Nancy,
you can't.
This has been wonderful. This went so fast. I can't believe it. But we
it did.
We're gonna have you back. I know, we'll have you back next month, and we'll go into another segment of quilt making with a little bit deeper thought process to it. And your new book is called Simple Curves and Quick Curves: Machine Appliqué the Easy Way, which they can find at your site, nancymahoney.com.
Yes, definitely.
Definitely. Thank you, Nancy. We'll see you next month.
Sounds good. Thanks, Pat.
This is Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. All of our shows are podcasted so that you can listen to them anytime you like. We'll see you next time.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.